There is an endless sea of podcasts about entrepreneurship. Talking about it, but not living it. We live it every day. This is Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel, talking about real estate investing, but also encompassing general subjects in regards to owning small to medium-sized businesses, and of course, all the struggles that business owners must overcome to be successful. This is Inside the Wolf's Den, and this is Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel.
Welcome back to Inside the Wolf's Den with your hosts, Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel. Today we have a special guest with us, Hanin Al-Qureshi. Did I say that correctly?
Yes.
Awesome. So just a brief bio on Hanin. She is the president of Legacy Insurance Advisors based out of Houston, Texas. Legacy Insurance Advisors is an independent insurance agency representing the best insurance carriers for all your insurance needs. As an independent insurance agent, they can choose the best carrier for your specific requirements. Their goal is to educate and service the Houston, Texas communities and throughout the state of Texas. Through their independence, they strive to educate the community on the ideal options that offer the lowest price and best coverages. They can provide you with a free assessment of your insurance need with a choice of your package fits you best. So before we get into insurance, which I know we all want to hear about this because we have a lot of first-time investors that listen, and so we'll talk about insurance. But I first want to get into you, Hanin. I know that when you and I first met at the Noble Mortgage event, I was admired by your success at such a young age. And so I kind of wanted to go into that. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what got you started on your path to success.
All right. Well, thank you so much for the intro, Joni. My name is Hanin Al-Qureshi, and my family has migrated to the United States in 2006. So I'm from Iraq. And I think, honestly, that was a huge part to my success, because we came from a land where we were hungry for opportunity. And coming to the United States, there's a lot of opportunity. Mm-hmm. So having that hunger, having to gone through a lot of struggle back home, and getting here and finding a way to grow and have a life for ourselves, I think that was a factor and the drive that I had in me. However, it wasn't immediate when we got here, because I was also 13 years old. So I think as soon as I saw my family struggling when I was 14, and I got an opportunity to be a home nurse for an elder lady that was speaking Arabic. So wow. I started doing that, and I was getting paid cash because I was underage. And then I started seeing that I was the only one that learned English fast, that was able to help my family. And, you know, I have five brothers and my parents, so I had to kind of like pick it up. Right. And at 16, I started working at HEB as a bagger. And then slowly got to know people. I'm really good at talking to people and just building relationships. Mm-hmm. So I got a different opportunity while I was at HEB from a client that was grocery shopping. And I started interviewing for like admin jobs, because they kind of opened my eyes to different things. So I went on Craigslist when I was 17, and my birthday was going to be like in 2 weeks. So I went on Craigslist and I applied for every admin job there was. And one of them was for an insurance agency with Allstate. I got that offer. I went in as an admin for an interview, and the agent was like, hey, I don't think you should be an admin. I think you should be in sales. So I got licensed within 2 weeks. Wow. And I immediately within 3 weeks became the top agent for Allstate. And I just loved it. Like, I loved the hustle. I loved talking to clients. I loved the math that was involved in it. I'm a math person. So it was just very intriguing. I was working 24/7. People would call me. I'm at the gym, you know, just leave the gym, go quote them and go back to my workout, or they would call me at 2 a.m. So I built a lot of relationships with dealerships. And with dealership, they can't really have a client drive out without insurance. Mm-hmm. So having built that relationship and the fast response, you know, I saw a huge success mm-hmm. with it. So I got an offer with Sterling McCall Ford to be their business development manager because they were planning on having a call center inside the dealership. And I declined it at the beginning because I was like, I really love what I'm doing. I love being with Allstate. I'm just going to stick to that. And they counteroffered. They said, well, if you do it, if you take our offer, we'll go ahead and put you in finance in about 3 months. So I did that. And I was still doing insurance. Mm-hmm. So kind of like an in-house agent.
Yeah.
At the same time. So I was doing two things at once. But I loved it. It was just very, I loved the hustle. I loved being at work. It's very, I enjoyed what I did. And I didn't feel like I was working at all. And as soon as I got into finance, which I was 18 when I got into finance, I went to a dealership in Dallas, Audi of Fort Worth. And I immediately excelled. And I think the key was that I believed in customer service more than anything else. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my job as a finance manager was to sell warranties. So it was really to convince you to buy air. And it's not something that you need. It's not something that you need, but I have to somehow make it sound like a need. So I discovered the things that people were not liking about the industry and slowly tried to build a different notion about the industry and finance in general, because everybody that goes into finance are like, oh, you know, this is where I'm going to spend $30,000, $20,000 on a car that I don't even love, you know? Mm-hmm. So slowly with time, I was the top producer for Group One Auto. I left Group One Auto to go with the John Eagle Group, and I was top producer with them as well for the time I was with them for 2 years. And then the thing about John Eagle Group, they're such a good group that everyone is there for, has been there for 30 years. So there wasn't really room for growth. And I have a rule. If I'm not growing within 2 years, I'm just out. Like I just have to go find my growth elsewhere. So I was, you know, very upfront with my managers, and I still have a relationship with them to this day, and they're amazing people. And just let them know, hey, I got a better opportunity as a director, and I think I'm going to take it. So I transferred to the Central Group. And I was a director with them for about a year. But the thing about the auto industry, you know, you get corrupted and you start loving it and you don't want to leave it. And it's this thing where you just have like, it's a love-hate relationship with it. But it's hard to leave it because, you know, it's hard to replace the income. There's, you work these 80 hours a week, but there's high rewards as well.
Right.
A lot of people just get stuck in it. And a lot of people that leave it just go back to it. So I didn't want to do things. I'm really good at looking at previous experiences from people and applying it to my own and kind of finding my own path based on their experience. So I have a lot of friends that left and came back. And I was like, if I'm going to do something, I might as well do something that's going to be similar to what I'm doing right now. That way I love it. And something that I can find my passion in, something that's going to be my own and build my own name with it. And I have a lot of friends that are developers, so they kind of encourage me with, hey, I'll send you business. You should do it. You know, they're all business owners, so they believed in having to own a business and just go and do it on your own and take risk. So a lot of my friends just convinced me to do it. They're like, hey, just go, just do it. Don't even think about it. But I actually did do it, and I was talking to Daryl Dyke before I even started it. It was just a thought in my head, and I was talking to Daryl Dyke. I was like, hey, I'm about to start this thing, and I want you to start sending me business. And he was like, I don't know about that. I'm really happy with my guy. He's very responsive. All my loan officers really love him. I was like, well, let me come to the office, and we'll see what happens. And somehow the conversation went from that to us being partners, and it took us 9 months to kind of get to know each other on that aspect and feel each other out and figure out a business plan, figure out what we want to approach, what kind of culture we want to build, and He's a very successful businessman with a great reputation, so I couldn't have picked a better partner. And that's how I kind of hopped into insurance, but...
Yeah, no, I think that's a great story. I mean, Daryl's awesome. I think you nailed it there. You couldn't have picked a better partner. And I think that I really admire your drive in, you know, just taking that risk and that next step, because sometimes that's the hardest part, right? What I kind of want to go into is, I know, you know, coming from the auto industry, Sean, I mentioned this earlier, it's a male-dominant field, and especially in finance. And so what challenges did you have to overcome being, I mean, I kind of already know the answer, probably you having five brothers.
Well, I think mainly was my age. A lot of people, because in finance, you know, the age range is usually 35 to 45. And I was 18 going into it. So immediately as I got into it, I realized that a lot of people didn't really look at me as a person that knows what she's doing. They just looked at me as a young female that got the position for out of luck, you know, and I had to prove that wrong. And the only way I could do that is to be the top in the nation. Mm-hmm. So slowly whenever I stopped focusing on the colleagues as much, and I started focusing on my clients. So as I built better relationships with my client and I did more sales and I overcame certain things, I broke records for certain companies that they were just like, we've never seen this happen. I think slowly I started earning everyone's respect. And they stopped looking at me as an 18-year-old that just started in the industry and is going to leave in 3 months. And with time, people got to know me because I get that a lot. Every time somebody looks at me or for some reason, they just see a face. They don't look at the way I speak, but the second I start speaking and I start talking to them about my experiences and what I know and what I don't know, then the respect starts to be built, you know? So I think trust and respect are earned. And I think with time, I had to work much harder than everybody else to earn that. But it was worth it because it gave me a reputation now that is solid. I have absolutely no problems with anybody in the auto industry and we're all friends. And that's something I had to learn, which I don't know if I learned it because I have five brothers or if it was just the nature of the business. I had to learn how to be a man and a female at the same time. You know, I had to learn how to speak to them using their language and at the same time be feminine enough to not lose myself.
Right.
What made you, because there's a lot of things in that, all that, that number one is like, what did that manager see in you at 18? Because I don't know much about the auto industry, but I know they probably, you're a star sales rep, right? And then you move up to finance and you just skipped the whole selling cars altogether and went straight to finance. How did,
I never sold in my life.
Yeah. So what did the manager see in you that was like, well, I'm going to, like this is the girl I got to have in finance. Like what? I'm just curious. Like what he saw.
Yeah, I should laugh at this. It was a bet.
It was a bet.
So risk taker. There you go.
And you don't bet me with anything because I'm gonna win. Like anybody that says that, I'm like game on. So I was working at Sterling McCall Ford, and we had a GM turnover because our general manager had just quit, and he went in and started his own dealership. So our region director office out of our dealership for 3 months or 2 months. His first day there was a Saturday, which I'm not sure if you know, but in the auto industry, that's one of the busiest days of the week. So his first day there was a Saturday and my job was call center. So all I had to do was make phone calls and get people in the door. So he came into my office and he acts like a salesman. So you can't really tell he's a manager or not because he just acts like a normal person that was like just there to sell cars. He was dressed in a suit, but all salesmen dressed in a suit. So I couldn't tell who he was. And I have already established my name in that dealership to where no one can talk to me in a certain way. Like it's just, you know, I'm the one that gets you leads and gets people in the door. And I'm also the last face they see. Mm-hmm. So you want to be on good terms with me kind of deal. Yeah. You don't want to talk down. And I was really friendly with everybody. So I wasn't like, it wasn't something that I expected. So he came to my office and he was just like, hey, how many appointments do we have today? And I said, 60. And he just kind of laughed at me. He was like, but really, how many of them are actually going to show? And I just looked at him like, excuse me? all 60. And we went into, we had a bet that if 50% of them were going to show, then he'll pay me $1,000. I was like, no, I don't care about the $1,000. If we're going to bet, we're going to go big. So how about if they all show, then you give me finance? And he's like, okay, we'll see about that. So I was like, all right, so you're not confident. And then we kind of kept like pressing on each other. And finally, he agreed to the bet. And I won, of course. Well, and I told him, I was like, hey, okay, where's the position? And they made it impossible. They made it so difficult. This was on a Saturday. They gave me the position on, they told me to start on a Monday in Dallas. Okay. And it was a floating position. So I would just float around dealerships, but I didn't care. I was like, all right, fine. I'll take it. It doesn't matter. And I had to pay for all my expenses and everything. So I just took it and I had no plans. I just knew that if I didn't take it at that moment, I would have to wait a year or two or just wait in line and everybody was going to forget. So, and he was shocked because he knew that the offer he had given me, I mean, a logical person would say no to, because I had absolutely no plan of breaking my lease or anything like that. It's just, I just on the fly said, okay, and went. Mm-hmm. But you know, these are the best decisions that I make that are on the fly. Because if I had thought about it for like 10 minutes, I wouldn't have gone to finance. But then as soon as I got in, I knew that I had a lot to prove, considering my age, considering the way I got in, considering the fact that I never sold a vehicle in my life. A lot of people looked at these things and they saw a lot of negative in them, and they saw a lot of luck involved, and they didn't see potential. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in my eyes, it was my sales skills that helped me close that deal, because that was a deal for me, you know, and I closed it. But nobody saw that. They just saw, well, she got financed because of this and this and that. But it didn't take me long to prove everybody, because, you know, whenever I put something in my head, I just go all out. I don't half-ass it. So whenever I got into finance, I started studying. I would stay until 2 a.m. reading programs, understanding lenders' programs, understanding clients. I read a lot of psychology book, a lot of self-motivational book, mm-hmm. Self-development books, just to kind of understand people and learn how to connect with people. Because, you know, you're young, you're still trying to figure things out. I'm still, English is still my second language, so I'm still learning different words and learning how to speak with different people and different classes. So I had to kind of expand and work on myself a lot, which is something I always tell my agents here, is that, you know, working on your self-evolvement is something you have to do on your own time. Mm-hmm. It's not something that, you know, I can teach you or I can do for you. So I think everybody that's doing sales in general, just that's one of the main things that they need to work on in order to succeed, is just evolving as a person, and slowly it will, you know.
Yeah, I think it's also, I think you, there was a lot to unpack there, and I want to like highlight some of the key ones, points, because I think you, number one, stepping up to a challenge, and I think there's opportunities in all our lives that, you know, you got to be, like they say, luck or is being ready. What is it? When opportunity meets preparedness, right? So like you, there was some opportunity, that guy happened to walk mm-hmm. in you, and you kind of challenged him, and it led to opportunity, but you were prepared to step up. And the other thing is that you took a floating job. I don't know if you went over it quickly, but that, hey, you went to another city, floated, in doing something you had never done before,
yeah.
And like stepping up to the challenge and proving yourself, and then just outworking everybody, you know, to get to where you are. And then just at a young age, which is what Joni and I have done, is self-improvement mm-hmm. at a young age. And we were in the same boat. So we were, you know, we started buying and selling houses when we were 19, and, you know, we had to raise a lot of money for that business and to cover, you know, we were doing, you know, 12 to 15 houses at a time, and it required a lot of private money. And so we were borrowing from people that were a lot older than us. And like, I'm sure they thought, what am I lending this 20-year-old kid, you know? But we, like you did, we proved ourselves. We showed people that were credible. And if they just looked at us, you know, yeah, you might see this young kid. But if we showed you, we were always very prepared in anything that when we presented something to somebody, you know, we practiced on what we were going to say. And anyway, so I think that's what you got to do when you're young and trying to overcome. But
yeah, absolutely. And another thing I wanted to highlight too, I love the confidence in you, the drive in you. But what I got out of the takeaway that I got out of it is you building the relationships over time, right? I think that's huge in any business, that you, anything that you do in life. It's all about building relationships. I feel like that's how we've been able to get where we're at today, and that's huge. So kudos to you for that. So if anyone's, you know, all our listeners out there, and that's a key takeaway there, is just building those relationships.
So, did you, I'm still want to rehash, like, the, how did you, at a young age, know how to, you know, like you said earlier, you were in a, like, be a male, but yet still be, you know, feminine
enough.
How did you, like, grasp that at a young age? Was it just some of your, I think, self-awareness?
Yeah.
Like positioning in certain situations, sometimes that takes years for people to develop. What do you think contributed to that?
I think this is going to be funny. I think Kura was a huge factor in that. So every time I would find myself confused about certain things, I would immediately just put it on Kura and ask the question. And the cool thing about it is you have real people that respond, and you have real people's stories that you can kind of listen to and understand. And what I started doing is, so I'm a math person, and that's why I love finance and insurance, and because it doesn't matter how old you are. It doesn't matter what kind of person you are. What matters is if the math can prove your credibility, then you're good, you know? And that's why I'm a number person when it comes to that, because it can always prove my credibility. I have records from when I started in the industry that shows, and I save them all the time. Like, I don't get rid of them. I don't delete them. I make sure they follow me. I have records from 6 years ago, and people usually just forget them, like, 3 months into. So I think having done that and looking at certain things and looking at a pattern people, I started to learn how to interact with people and how, by nature, I'm a caregiver too. So I love to give. I love to care for people. And that's why at 14, you know, I was a caregiver for an elder lady, because I enjoyed doing that. And I think that taught me a lot too, because it taught me to care for people beyond the money aspect or the financial, the monetary value that they add to your life. So, and when you do that slowly, the money comes with it. You know, a lot of people just don't realize that. They focus on the monetary value and they forget that the person that's in front of you is a human, and, you know, they go through things just like you do. And if you can connect with these people, then that's the key, really. It doesn't matter. People buy service. That's what I learned. They don't buy prices, because there are so many agencies, there are so many dealerships that have the same exact vehicle, same exact financing options, but why they come to you is because they feel comfortable or they like who you are. They like talking to you. So during my pitch, I had to learn that whoever comes into my office, we spend 15 minutes talking about financing, but they're in my office for an hour or so, and the rest, we're just talking about that person, who they are, what they like to do. And that's, I learned that people like to talk about themselves a lot. So I would start it with asking them a question about who they are. And it's a genuine question. It's not a question just to, you know, try to do business with them. It's trying to understand who's in front of me. Because like you said, I'm trying to build that relationship with
them. And understand in order the clients.
To learn a little bit about them and what they are and what they do. And, you know, you get different stories. And it's great because you can also learn from real people, from their stories. And slowly, you know, they're telling you about themselves. You're telling them about yourself. Somehow you can connect on a topic or you don't. But that relationship, that bond becomes stronger. Mm-hmm. And it becomes about a friendship. You know, I'm buying services from my friends, not from a stranger that I'm only going to see once every 5 years. Mm-hmm. But there are certain things that I had to read about. There are certain things that I had to kind of explore with people. I'm an observer, so I like to observe, and I would watch what other finance managers would do and how they would make mistakes. And, you know, the John Eagle Group was one of the best groups I worked for because they have cameras in every office. So you can go back and watch yourself and kind of see what you did wrong and adjust it that way. So I was obsessed with it.
That's awesome. I love that.
I would go back and see if I did a deal wrong or if I felt like I lost a client somewhere. I would go back and kind of understand what I did wrong and adjust it. So I'm really good at, and this is developing with time. It's not something that just happened overnight.
Yeah.
I became very good at acknowledging certain things or becoming aware of certain things, acknowledging them, and then correcting them. Mm. So, and I think if you just acknowledge and not correct, it doesn't do anything for you other than just like a mental, it drains your energy mentally. Mm-hmm. Because you want to do something about it, but you just don't.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think we listen to calls, but we've never recorded a camera. But that'd be, because I'm sure you could see a lot in body language.
Oh, absolutely. And, for yeah, sure.
That's kind of cool to hear you did that. And what, like what kept you humble throughout all that, you know, and be, you know, wanting to keep improving yourself and developing, you know, especially when you started to hit some of those highs, you know, as far as top sales and those kind of things, what kept you grounded?
You know, I was consistent, but the thing about the auto industry is it doesn't matter what you did yesterday, it matters what you do today. Mm-hmm. So you can always fall back. And I used to be obsessed with looking at the reports every night, because if I'm like number two or number three, or if I'm falling down in the ranking, then I just can't sleep because I'm like, okay, I'm going backwards. So I think something that really scares me is going backwards and going to from where I started, which is zero, where we had nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, and I was a kid. I wasn't really an adult. So I know a lot of people don't really have responsibilities at the age that I had all the responsibilities in, but I think just I'm terrified of going backwards, and it can happen within a blink of an eye. It doesn't matter how good you are, it doesn't matter how successful you are, it doesn't matter how wealthy you are, it can happen to anybody anytime at any moment. So I always remind myself of that, is that if you start bragging, if you start not caring and just getting too comfortable. One thing I hate is getting comfortable. Mm-hmm. So every time I'm comfortable, I like do something chaotic to disturb my life and just add more. I honestly, so I believe diamonds are made under pressure, and I always say that to myself. So if I feel comfortable in a situation, I always have to add pressure somewhere. So, you know, whenever I was a director, I was very comfortable. I was making great money. Everybody loved dealing with me. I loved the people I worked with, but I got scared because I was starting to get comfortable, and I was like, all right, I need to do something that's crazy enough to just get me to add a lot of pressure in my life. That way I could feel like I'm alive.
Going into business for yourself is, is going to get, putting a lot of pressure. So
did it for me.
For sure.
But I think that just knowing that it can all go away in a blink of an eye.
Yeah, I love that. Well, thank you. I love that you were open and vulnerable on this podcast. I think a lot of our listeners can definitely learn a lot from you. So let's switch gears a little bit and go to Legacy Insurance and talk about insurance for a second. So I know that your company specializes in helping investors with their insurance. So can you give our listeners more info on that and how you can assist them?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are an independent brokerage. So we have about 300 plus carriers that we are contracted with, that we can quote with. We do deal mainly with real estate investors and a lot of developers. However, we can do all kinds of insurance. So we do a lot of business insurance, any general liability for investors. If they're doing a fast flip and they need a 3-month policy, we have options for that, which a lot of agencies don't, just because it's a shorter term policy. We do landlord policies, we do coastal policies if the property is on the coast. We do short-term rentals, we do builder's risk, it's one of our biggest sales. Builder's risk, property insurance, any kind of insurance that involves commercial lines, any kind of business we can insure pretty much. The difference or how we are different from others or how we can benefit our clients is that we are an independent brokerage. Insured, we don't work for the insurance company. Mm-hmm. So captive agents usually are working for a certain carrier. Like, for example, if you're a State Farm agent, you're working for State Farm. With us, we're not working for a certain carriers. We have several carriers and we can shop it around instead of the client going around and shopping it themselves. And we'll always apply the best premium, the best rate. We always give our clients options as far as a low deductible, a higher deductible quote, just to for them to understand their options. Mm-hmm. One thing I do with every client to make sure that they're understanding what they're getting is that we always get on the phone and we make sure that they understand the coverage they have. And what I'm noticing is a lot of people don't understand the coverage they have. They just understand that they have a homeowner's policy, a landlord policy, a builder's risk policy, but they don't really understand what goes into it.
Yeah, I can see that. That's actually one of the questions I was going to ask is what mistakes do you see? And that's one that I see with, you know, investors that are purchasing some of our properties. They don't get the correct coverage that they need, right? Would you say that's the number one mistake?
100%.
Yeah.
It's not their fault. You know, a lot of people don't want to shop for insurance. They don't want to learn about insurance because it's something that you're obligated to get, and if you feel obligated to get it, you just want to get it over with.
Right.
So I understand it. However, I think it causes a lot of issues down the line, and I'm all about building relationships. So I don't want my clients to be mad or angry about certain claims that are not paid because certain coverages were not provided or not disclosed during the purchase process. So I try to always get on the phone with my clients and explain the coverages that they're getting, explain the benefit of the coverage, explain what they're not getting as well. That way they understand that if something happens, I think one of the biggest mistakes that I've seen a lot of claims get denied from previous agents is that the water backup coverage. Mm-hmm. A lot of homeowners, landlord policies didn't have that coverage, or they were limited at $1,000. So when the freeze hit, a lot of homeowners thought they had insurance, but
they didn't.
They did, just didn't cover it. Mm-hmm. So I tried to kind of use real life examples to help them understand why I'm doing it, because nobody wants to be on the phone and listen to you talk about insurance. So I try to kind of give them a real life example and of why I'm doing what I'm doing, because I don't want them to be in that similar position. And usually everybody listens after that.
Yeah.
I have to give them a reality check beforehand.
Yeah. We get so many, because a lot of our clients are buying all over the country. And so they might get a policy, let's just say like Ohio, right, or something like that. And
it's not the same in Texas.
And the insurance agent, they use an insurance agent there, and they quote it here, and it's like, well, it's way cheaper than your person that quoted. I'm like, well, compare apples to apples, because like, right. Well, they don't realize like the weather that we have here, mm-hmm. and like a lot of the stuff isn't like named storms isn't on that policy. It's like, well, more than likely, we're going to have a named storm cause a lot of damage at some point, you know, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, they trust
and that's another thing about our agency is that, you know, during the storm season, a lot of carriers have restrictions on binding restrictions or just starting new business. Because we have a lot of carriers and we have a lot of options, we can still quote and we can still bind coverage during storm season. So we have a lot of leeway and options as to what we can provide our insureds with. We try to always go with admitted carriers just because we want to get them the best coverage. But sometimes the carriers won't write it, or it's not a risk that it's in that market. So we have to go non-admitted. So we have all the options that they need as far as getting the right coverage for a cost-effective premium as well. And I try not to focus on just getting a premium, not because it's not important, but because I feel like a lot of people forget the coverage that they need, and how that premium can be adjusted in certain ways, but you still need certain coverages that you can't or you shouldn't give up on just because it affects the premium with $100 or $50 or whatever the cost is. So that's what we do. We try to educate our clients first thing, and then build a relationship, make sure there's a connection there, make sure there's trust, and give them the options that they're looking for, and then we'll proceed with closing the business once everyone is happy.
Nice. Awesome. So what's your...
We asked this question
to everybody. Yeah. So what's your next? What are you looking to accomplish over the next 5 to 10 years? Like, is it just building, you know, your insurance? Are you going to take over the world, or like what's your...
I definitely want to.
And you're capable of that. I can see that.
Thank you. I think what's next is, so we just extended our license to Arizona. So we do want to be have an office nationwide. We do want to have an office in every state. We're extending our license to Arizona. We're about to extend it to California as well. And the vision that I'm seeing for Legacy is very big. And we have a very committed staff here that sees the vision and believes in it. And of course, Daryl is a great partner to lead this journey with. So we are moving into a bigger office as well within the next month or so. So we're growing, and we have a lot more business than we can handle. So our team is growing rapidly. And I think that gives me a lot of hope to what we can be in the future. So I do want Legacy to be in every state. I do want us to be the top in the nation as far as customer service, making sure that our clients are happy. And that's really one of the major things. And I tell that to every client I deal with, is that policy that I'm writing at the moment is not the most important one. It's the one after that, and the one after that, and after that. I want to build that relationship. I don't care to just write one policy, because the thing about insurance, it's an easy industry to get into if you know what you're doing, but it's something that can grow really fast. It's stackable, and a lot of agencies grow and they reach a certain point where they get comfortable and they lose track of their vision and their goals and what they want, and they start losing clients because they stop focusing on their clientele and their customer service. They start focusing more on, okay, well, we just have new business at this point, and the renewals are there. But slowly, these clients are going to go to different agencies because they don't believe in your clientele. They don't believe in your customer service. Right. They don't believe your values and what you have to provide. So I always have to make sure, and I always remind my agency this here, is that we can't ever get comfortable, because that's when you lose your business. So I do want us to see... our company to be the top in the nation when it comes to customer service. I do want us to be the number one when it comes to multifamily, builder's risk policies, certain policies that I believe are what's driving our business right now. And at some point, I want to have an account manager for certain policies and just kind of organize it a little bit more. But we're not at that point yet. So... I think the vision is big. I think we have a path, and I think we're definitely going to get there. It's just a matter of putting the right people in the right place.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing your success. And so how can anyone get involved? How can our listeners get involved with you?
So you can call our office, which we have. Our office right here is 281-822-5677. You can go on our website, which is legacyinsuranceadv.com, and you'll have all of our contact pages. I also have my cell listed on my business card and all my social media accounts, which is 832-379-0542. So a lot of people, if they don't reach me via phone or email, they can always text me. My email is haneen@legacyinsuranceadv.com. So
can they still get a hold of you at like 2 o'clock in the morning, or?
Honestly, you know what?
Honey would probably respond.
Client this weekend at like, I think it was like 12 a.m. about their deal. So, you know, it's, again, whenever I deal with my clients, it becomes a friendship at some point where they're comfortable enough to message me with certain problems at a certain time, and they don't feel like, you know, they're calling the office. They feel like they're calling their friend and telling them, hey, this is what I need you to do for me. So I try, you know, at some point it's going to be too big where I can't get on my phone all day long and just talk to people about certain things. But I do want to train every single staff member of our agency to be able to do these things. And mainly because your network is your net worth. You know, these mm-hmm. relationships you're building, they're not just about insurance. They're about other things. And I tell that to everybody here where, you know, if you have a problem with legacy in the future, you have a network of business owners, people that have established businesses that you could just call and say, hey, friend, what's up? Mm-hmm. I'm looking for a job. And you got it immediately. So I hate saying it, but it's the truth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's these people, these relationships that you're building, they're not normal relationships where it's something that adds value to your life in the long run. You get to learn from these people, too. So I always try to build the friendship and make them comfortable enough and message me with any issues or email me if they feel more comfortable with the email or call me, which I don't always answer the phone, but I'll always like text and reply back and say, hey, I'll call you back in a minute if I'm in the middle of something. So, yeah, I mean, I'm very reachable. If that's the question.
Well, we'll have all your info on the show notes for our listeners to get a hold of you. And, of course, guys, if you like this episode, refer it out. If you know somebody that needs insurance in Texas or any of the other locations that Hunting mentioned, you know, she is here for you. And, Hunting, thank you so much for joining us today and adding so much value to our listeners.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
All right. Well, thank you, and we'll see you all next week.
See ya.
All right.
You've been listening to Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkle. Tons of entrepreneurial podcasts are out there talking.
Talk, talk, talking.
But Joni and Sean are living it every single day. Their portfolio now includes many franchises and medium-sized businesses. We talk about the trials and motivators of successfully running a business. Join us again soon for another podcast. But until then, reach out on the website at InsideTheWolf'sDen.com, on Facebook at Inside the Wolf's Den, on Instagram at Inside the Wolf Den. We'll see you again soon. This is Inside the Wolf's Den. We'll see you next time.